This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. It's political season as the November midterm elections get closer and closer each day. Joining us to discuss the candidates on the fall ballot in Ohio and Kentucky are Jean Beaupre, the Assistant Director of the Philosophy, Politics, and Public Honors Program at Xavier University, Cincinnati Enquirer Politics and Kentucky Government Reporter Scott Wortman, and Ohio Public Radio and Television State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler. You can join the conversation. Our number is 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. You'll also find us on Facebook and Twitter. And we thank you all for being here. And thanks to Karen for joining us in Columbus.
Thanks for having
us. Very happy to be here.
Well, Karen, since you're the only one not in the studio, we'll start with you.
Oh, good.
A couple weeks ago, I believe it was, Larry Sabato, a well-known political analyst who has a pretty good track record for predicting political races, in his crystal ball report, changed the status of the Ohio governor's race to safe for Republicans, meaning he believes that John Kasich will be reelected in November. In the process, he also called Ed Fitzgerald, I think his term was a dud of a candidate. Mm-hmm. How did that play with Ohio Democrats that a noted political analyst said their gubernatorial candidate is a dud?
Well, I think a lot of them are very concerned about their chances this fall. There are four other statewide executive offices on the ballot, attorney general, auditor, secretary of state, and treasurer. And the Democrats who are running in those races have been running for quite a long time, not nearly as long as Ed Fitzgerald has, but they've been running for a while, and they've out-fundraised him, at least in the last election, or the last fundraising report. The only one who didn't raise more money than Ed Fitzgerald among the Democrats was Nina Turner, who's running for Secretary of State. So they're a little bit concerned about the effect that the troubles that are at the top of the ticket might have on their races, but they say that they're still running, they're still out there fundraising, and I'm interviewing all of the candidates for the four executive offices that I just mentioned on our TV show that we produce here at the State House called The State of Ohio, and I'm asking the Democrats those questions, and like I said, they keep saying they're still running, they're in this race to win, but it is going to be hard for them because the top of the ticket usually gets the most attention, and the votes all fall off as you go down the ticket when you start looking at how people actually cast ballots.
Karen, this this idea of Fitzgerald dragging down the rest of the ticket, the Bliss Institute at University of Akron had its Buckeye poll the other day. It showed, obviously, that Fitzgerald was way behind Kasich. But it had, like, a little glimmer of hope for a couple of the down-ticket Democrats that they were within striking distance, didn't it?
Yes, it did. I mean, in the Secretary of State's race, it had John Husted leading Nina Turner 30-25%, which, when you think about that, 30-25%, that means there's a lot of people out there who did not respond at all, who didn't say who they were going to vote for. 45% undecided in that race. There are some other races that there seem to be some glimmers of hope. I mean, Connie Pillich from the Cincinnati area, the Democrat running against Josh Mandel for treasurer. It's been long talked about that she had the best shot going into this because of Mandel's performance in the 2012 race that he ran against Senator Sherrod Brown. She's been doing okay in polling, but there hasn't been any point at which the Democrat was leading the incumbent Republican.
Carney was fairly close, too, I believe, wasn't he,
I don't have it in front of me.
I'm assuming Carney is Auditor of State.
Right.
Exactly, against David Yost.
Right.
And the one race, though, that I think most people, besides the governor's race, that a lot of people have kind of written off has been the attorney general's race. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got Mike DeWine, who has maintained a fair amount of popularity, even while taking some positions that a lot of people have said they oppose or are concerned about with regard to Hobby Lobby and some of these other issues. He still, I think, maintains a pretty strong lead over David Pepper, the former Hamilton County Commissioner. And, you know, Pepper has been running probably the most aggressive campaign of all of the other four statewides, but it's a long way to go to defeat Mike DeWine.
Gene, what do you make of Ed Fitzgerald's troubles in Ohio?
I would use the opposite of saying he put a damper on things. I think things exploded. I mean, they just fell apart, I think, in lots of ways. I think the down ticket candidates, you know, in smaller races are really hurt by something like that. And I was wondering, I wanted to ask if when the Bliss thing came out, are they polling likely voters?
Mm-hmm.
Registered voters.
Registered voters. Yeah.
Registered voters. That's my understanding. So, and it does make a big difference when they start polling likely voters. Right. That does make a big difference.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I mean, Karen and or Gene, what do you see the impact on actual Democratic turnout if the person at the top of the ticket is that weak?
I don't know why somebody shows up unless there are other issues on the ballot that people care about, there's always a cadre of those with any given issue.
Or some local races.
Right. Well, but yes, and even in the local races, I don't know that they go, how much a local race means to them to go to the polls when, you know, that's where they start their voting and it's not, you know, up on the ticket. But, you know, the other thing that I wonder about, and I don't have any data or anything on this, is the pall that it put over fundraising for candidates on the Democratic side. You know, why would if you feel like I think a lot of people do that the top of the ticket being as weak as it is isn't going to get elected, and then that's going to trickle down, I'm going to save my money for another race.
Yeah, and I think there is some concern about that. I mean, when you look at the fundraising totals from August, Ed Fitzgerald raised less than the four Democratic candidates for statewide office. Mm-hmm. He has less than they do all put together. And when you look at the other side, the flip side, John Kasich has $12.5 million in the bank. He raised $1.2 million in August compared to Ed Fitzgerald's $111,000. That's a 10-to-1 gap.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a huge gap. John Kasich has more money than all of the Republican incumbents running put together. And that's a huge war chest that he has. I know we keep hearing over and over, you can't buy elections and money doesn't win all the time. But boy, that's a huge number to overcome. And, you know, we've talked to some political scientists and others who have said that this idea that if Ed Fitzgerald hasn't given up, it certainly seems to some folks like his campaign is directing things into other areas and trying to direct things over to get out the vote efforts and that sort of thing.
Right.
But, you know, what is going to be the effect on fundraising down the road? And these are critical, critical months for these candidates to get some money to get their messages out.
Karen, is the Republican Governors Association still involved, or they've just...
Well, I know that they had
been
running ads. I mean, they had been taking kind of the aggressive, quote, bad guy role in the governor's race. They had been attacking Ed Fitzgerald. The last ads that I saw were a couple weeks ago. I haven't seen a new RGA ad. I have seen a new Kasich ad. And so he's still, you know, getting his message out there. But there are people who say he's getting his message out there because he's planning on what he's going to do after he wins in November.
Right.
So that.
And I just figured the Republican Governors Association would decide, okay, well, we've won this. Let's move on to a state that's really competitive and put our money there.
And I think that's true for them. But if you're the governor, sitting governor, and you're getting reelected, why wouldn't you do everything you could to be in the best position possible for whatever might come along next, read presidential candidacy.
Yep. Exactly. Yep.
Karen, were these issues for Fitzgerald? I know we've heard a lot about the not having a driver's license, and there were other problems. Were those simmering below the surface, and they all just appeared at once? Because I remember you sent out an email that you send all your stations, and I think your term was there was a problem, almost the term imploding on Fitzgerald's campaign. Did these just all, they were under the surface, and then they all just kind of joined together at once?
Well, I think, you know, there was the issue last year where he had nominated State Senator Eric Kearney from Cincinnati to join the ticket, and then there were all the revelations that Senator Kearney had some tax issues. That was a problem. Then, you know, this situation that happened in 2012 where he was in a car with a woman who is not his wife. Then there was the whole revelation about the driver's license. I think it was all these things coming together that led to the implosion. And that's not my word necessarily. That's the word that a lot of other people have been using, including the Washington Post, which had a headline, "The Remarkable Implosion of Ed Fitzgerald." That's quite a thing to see on a national news site or on a national newspaper.
It's also quite a thing to see a candidate for governor starting off stump speeches by basically apologizing for his
sins. It is. And it's funny because when he apologizes, it's kind of almost a vague apology. He's not necessarily apologizing for anything specific. But, you know, he's also in some of his fundraising emails and emails to supporters seems to be taking a stance of somewhat aggressiveness. Like, you know, I've made mistakes, but this campaign is not about whether I had a driver's license. It's about the issues that Ohioans care about. The problem is right now, Ed Fitzgerald may be sending these emails, but he has no other way to get that message out to people who might be listening. He has no money for television. He has no way to really get this message out beyond just word of mouth via supporters.
You know, I think, just a quick aside, I think apologizing is in politics is an art form all in itself. I mean, there's a narrow line that you have to, and it's different for each set of circumstances. You know, it's an art, and I think it's very hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Karen, what happened to change Governor Kasich's fortunes? Because in 2011, he had a lot of folks upset with the Senate Bill 5 issue, and there were some then that predicted he wouldn't get a second term, and now that seems to have all dissipated.
Well, it certainly does show that candidate selection is a big deal and that whoever you put on the ballot does matter. You can't just put anybody out there. And I think one of the things that hurt Democrats was when Ed Fitzgerald finally emerged as a candidate, there just had been nobody else who had been really showing any interest. Other candidates that had a name recognition to them just really fell by the wayside very, very quickly. And so Ed Fitzgerald was kind of left to be the standard bearer for the party. You're right, there was a tremendous amount of anti-Kasich rhetoric out there after the 2011 vote on Senate Bill 5. There still is a fair amount of anti-Kasich rhetoric out there. But Kasich has enough money now that he can blunt some of that. He can campaign positively. He can campaign with the incumbency behind him, which really does make a difference. When he goes out as the governor, he's not campaigning, but he is campaigning, you know? And so he's got a lot of things in his favor that a lot of people might not have expected 2 years ago when the whole Senate Bill 5 thing was blowing up.
You have to ask, where is labor after, you know, issue 5?
Right.
And they were so pumped about, you know, all that. And it went away. I mean, it's not evident.
And I've heard some criticism from labor that maybe Ed Fitzgerald wasn't the candidate they would have selected. And I've had a hard time trying to pin down exactly what that might mean.
Right.
But you're right. Where are the labor unions? I mean, the FOP has endorsed Fitzgerald. The state troopers did endorse Fitzgerald and then took back the endorsement, which is an extraordinary thing right there.
Mm-hmm.
But and of course, the labor unions are behind Fitzgerald. They've all endorsed him in some way. But there isn't that full force campaign, that full-throated thing that we saw in 2011 with Senate Bill 5, or even with Ted Strickland back when he was running in 2010.
Well, yeah, I mean, the labor unions can do that to a certain extent, but you have to have the candidate lead the charge on that.
So and I guess the point
that is, does not happen.
Yeah, I mean, strategically, if not in personality, that it just was a strategic move for them. Why spend the money to? But you know, 4 years ago, you know, I thought Kasich would be hung out this time around. They had incredible organizational skills and everything in all this.
Right.
Well, and I think, too, labor is a little bit tired. I mean, in the sense that they had 2011 where they fought Senate Bill 5, 2012 they were mobilized for Obama, and a lot of them are very worried about the so-called right to work situation that could be happening next year or the year after. And so I think there is a concern about making sure that there are the resources to fight that if and when it comes up.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a lot of effort it takes to get all these mobilizations going.
Before we take a break and leave the Ohio governor's race yesterday, I believe it was Ed Fitzgerald supported the legalized marijuana. Is that something that he can capitalize? Medical use of marijuana.
Right.
Is that something that will gain him any traction?
There's a big mobile constituency for that, I'm sure. But I mean, sort of like, why not? At this
I mean,
point?
Polling says that people overwhelmingly support this.
Yeah.
Support that.
It's not on the ballot this year. It didn't make the ballot this year, but there is a lot of, at least poll-wide, support for it. The question is, will it ever get to the ballot? Will it ever get a motivated campaign to get people to fill out the petition forms, get them in, and get not just to the ballot, but also to get people to vote for it. And so that's a big, big deal. And it's never happened yet, even though polls have shown if it got to the ballot, it would probably pass. Mm-hmm.
We are talking today about the November midterm elections in Ohio and Kentucky. And I promise, Scott, we're going to get to Kentucky next. We'll do that right after a short break. This is 91.7 WVXU. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. We're discussing the candidates on the ballot for the November midterm elections in Ohio and Kentucky. Our guests are Gene Beaupre, the Assistant Director of the Philosophy, Politics, and Public Honors Program at Xavier University, Cincinnati Inquirer Politics and Kentucky Government Reporter Scott Wortman, and Ohio Public Radio and Television Statehouse News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler. You can join our conversation. The number is 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. Well, Scott, as promised, we talked about the Ohio governor's race to start. We don't want to ignore Kentucky. And while the stakes for Governor Kasich in Ohio seem to be rising, it's still a bit of a toss-up in Kentucky on the U.S. Senate race between Mitch McConnell and Allison Lundergan Grimes.
Though you can tell the McConnell campaign is getting a little bit more confident with each day. I'm getting daily reminders on a new poll that shows McConnell's leading.
You get those emails too.
Yeah, they're not bashful about sending them out. But the independent polling has been looking a little bit more favorable towards McConnell. It's still close, but polls are showing anywhere from a 4% to 8% lead. Though the Grimes campaign yesterday to combat that had their own internal poll that shockingly showed her ahead by 1%, but that was an internal poll. So you can't call the race yet, but McConnell does seem to be gaining momentum.
Has the independent polling you've seen include the Libertarian guy?
There have been a few. I can't cite the specific polls that have shown it, but the last poll I saw showed he was pulling at 7%, I believe. But it showed that he was taking both Democrats and Republicans. So people I've talked to don't think it'll help or hurt either candidate.
The last time we had you on, I believe, was the end of July, maybe. It was in advance of the Fancy Farm picnic. And both seemed to get through the picnic without a lot of scars.
What I've heard from both sides, people felt that Allison did the best at Fancy Farm, but when they went head-to-head at the Farm Bureau a few weeks after that, a lot of people thought Mitch came off a lot more easygoing and a lot more was able to answer the questions a lot more fluidly than Allison. That's what the general consensus was. So it'll be interesting on October 13th when they actually debate for the first and only time on KET, how Allison handles herself.
And that is a full-fledged debate with the moderator. It's not just the Farm Bureau was a joint appearance.
Yes, although they answered the same questions. So it was kind of the first time they went head-to-head. And you could tell that Mitch McConnell had been there before and knew how to kind of handle the questions a lot easier. So it'll be interesting to see how Allison handles herself.
And KET's October 13th debate has no studio audience, from what I understand.
As of now, yes.
Okay.
I don't know where they're going to corral the reporters or how that's going to work yet. So.
Yeah, but that was something that the McConnell campaign, from what I understand, had insisted on.
Gene, what do you make of Kentucky? The Kentucky Senate race. We won't talk about the state. Let's talk about the U.S. Senate race.
I love the state. Let me start there. And ask to run, I would. No. I think it, you know, I thought she's given them a fight along the way. You know, I think that that's there's something to be said for that. But, you know, I'd go on nothing but gut. I haven't, you know, I don't see numbers or anything like that. I think if she loses, I think she's a candidate for something, you know, something else. I don't think she's hurt herself that way. But I think in the end, you know, he's going to have votes there that, you know, we don't even know about yet, I suspect.
That's a good point, too. I mean, if Rand Paul runs for president, which if he doesn't, he's been a lot of waste of time leading up to this point, she could go for that seat.
Yep.
Someone emailed a question. Did the Grimes' issue with the bus go anywhere, or is that going anywhere, or is that just something that was there for maybe a week, 10 days, and
now
it's gone?
Explain a little background on that, too.
Well, that was where her campaign bus was rented out at a below-market rate by her father's company, Jerry Lundergan's company, which would violate campaign finance laws. So the Republicans filed a complaint on that. I think... you had scandals that canceled each other out because at the very same time, McConnell's campaign manager, Jesse Benton, resigned because of a scandal that developed when Jesse Benton was Ron Paul's campaign manager, where that campaign paid a state senator to change his endorsement to Ron Paul. So he had to resign for that.
Don't you think that this kind of thing is the value of it is a grainy picture of the candidate with some headlines and, you know, and but it's when you go to the polls, unless you can get some traction with more about an attitude of how she is than the particulars, that's what you're trying to do. It's death by a thousand cuts.
I mean, it's hard to get people too worked up about a bus.
Right.
You know.
Well, I think, I mean,
unless you miss the bus.
Right. Yeah.
But that's my point. You don't say that. You use some other variation. And
exactly.
It's really the graphic, the visual, that's more important.
Well, even before Alison Grimes entered the race, for the last 2 years, McConnell has been hammering home that, you know, this is about control of the Senate and it's me versus Obama. And I honestly think that seems to be resonating. At least that's what the polls show. And I think that, I mean, Kentucky in the last 15 years, I mean, since 2000, on the national level with the Senate races and the presidential races, has always gone Republican, and I think that is a large part of it.
I think I'm not sure if you had a chance to see this. I think there was an Associated Press article maybe today or a little story on our wire anyway that basically Alison Lundergan Grimes' fate rests with swing voters in Kentucky, which President Obama overwhelmingly lost those swing voters in 2012.
Yes, yeah. And I honestly don't know. I'm always skeptical on how many of those swing voters are that are really undecided. People tend to, even if they say they're independent, go one way or the other subconsciously. So she would have to really get out the Democratic vote, I think, to close that gap.
Is there any concern for the McConnell campaign, and you may have written this story, that I think that Alison Lundergan Grimes outraised Mitch McConnell money-wise in Northern Kentucky?
She did. Yeah. There are a lot of prominent, or there are a few key prominent Democratic fundraisers like Nathan Smith and Fort Mitchell, who's had some high-profile fundraising dinners and events for her. And, Northern Kentucky has financially come out in support for her.
What about this idea that there are some Republicans who are upset with Mitch McConnell and they're not going to vote for him and they're just not going to vote at all? Is that something that he needs to be worried about, that some of these folks are going to, his Republican supporters even, are going to sit on the sidelines and just not cast a ballot, period?
I've heard that, although I'm hearing that less as we get closer to the election and the sting from the Tea Party candidate Matt Bevin's loss in the primary starts to fade in the background. I think people were a bit sore in May when their candidate lost, but I think that's starting to fade now.
And has he still remained pretty much silent?
He hasn't endorsed, though I do see him at a lot of events that I've gone to around the state, so he's angling to run for some other office at some point. So he's on the periphery, but he has not endorsed McConnell.
Possibly governor.
Yeah.
What about, I know... one of the first shows that we did last year, we had Kentucky Governor Beshear on briefly, who ran against Mitch McConnell, and he said it was not a pleasant experience. Has McConnell shown all that he can do, or has he kind of tamed it down a little bit with Alison Lundergan Grimes being his opponent?
I don't think he's tamed it down. The good thing that Alison has brought to the Democratic ticket is she's a newcomer, so there wasn't a lot of dirt or record that he could throw back at her. But no, I think he's not holding back.
Gene, this obviously is getting a lot of national attention, and if Republicans are to take over control of the U.S. Senate, clearly Mitch McConnell has to be reelected if they have any hope of retain or taking over control of the Senate.
Well, and one of the things that they're putting him out front, however you want to say that, and you know, just in the last 48 hours with the president's speech coming and all that, you know, he's a stand-up guy in a lot of situations, and a couple of things that shows his leadership and helps him back in the state. I mean, he's in the best possible position for that. You know, you guys are better at knowing what's happening in Kentucky than me. But when I go on to watch the television and the half hour before the speech starts, he's the guy that's standing there. That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been the foundation of McConnell's campaign even before any Democrat entered the race.
Mm-hmm.
And still lots of outside money, outside the state money coming into both campaigns?
Absolutely, yes. This is about control of the Senate, and that's, you have powerful interests all over the country trying to influence that.
Former President Clinton, I think, has been to Kentucky to campaign for Grimes, is scheduled to.
Yes.
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren has been in. Mm-hmm. Do we expect any of those big names back before Election Day? Has anything been announced?
I'm not aware of anything being announced yet, but I'm sure we'll see something in the last 72 hours.
Well, I mean, that was the one thing that Grimes, you know, obviously McConnell is trying to tie her to Obama. She would much rather be tied to Bill Clinton,
mm-hmm.
who is still a popular figure.
He won
among
both
many,
Kentucky
yeah,
both times.
Yeah, among many Kentucky voters.
Mm-hmm.
Is that message kind of getting through, or is it just...
Well, if the polls are to be believed, and I think that the only reason why you'd see McConnell ahead, because that's, again, been what he's been hammering home since day one, seems like people are still associating Democrat with Obama, and...
Where is...
Is that the general problem, Gene, in these Senate races around the country, you think?
About Obama?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, it depends on the chemistry in a particular state, but
right.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, I mean, this is an interesting point to me. If you're Clinton's advisors, I think you're watching the numbers to see whether he could go in there and, you know, be the savior, make a difference. I'm not sure he would go if he might, because he's that kind of guy at this point in his career. But, you know, that I think that would be key. If she can stay close and get him in and get him to work, that could be you know better than I do, but yeah. I think that could be a big factor.
Well, Allison Grimes' father, Jerry Lundergan, is good friends with the Clintons,
mm-hmm.
and so that I'm sure he wouldn't hesitate to come in.
I mean, right, I'm thinking, oh, well, he might worry about his image. He's not, you know, mm-hmm. he's well beyond
yeah,
that.
Right.
Where is McConnell's support the strongest in the state?
Kentucky and kind of around the Louisville area. Louisville's a majority Democrat, but yeah, the base of his support and donations, in-state donations, are Western Kentucky.
Gene, there was a lot of thought, at least what I've seen ad-wise, unless I'm missing them. I mean, there's a lot of tying things, you know, candidates to President Obama, but it doesn't seem like I'm seeing a lot of people bring up Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. They're mentioning him, but not necessarily Obamacare.
That's an interesting. I don't know if I've seen it in a commercial, but I've seen it, you know, talked about in some places. But you know, you guys know all this. I mean, they're working from numbers, and if there's a place where the numbers don't show that that's an anchor instead of a sail, then you know they won't use it. But and besides, I think there's a lot of other stuff. I don't know. This is just my impression, but there are images that they can use of Obama without. It's more about, I think it's not about a particular issue with Obama. It's about an attitude towards him that they're trying to hit. They're trying to resonate with.
Particularly in Kentucky,
yeah.
the Affordable Care Act is a tricky issue for Republicans, because the term Obamacare is not popular, but the health care exchange and expansion of Medicaid, which has brought hundreds of thousands of people insurance that didn't have it before, is pretty popular in Kentucky. So it's kind of a catch-22 if Republicans bring it up.
Gene, would you have predicted, I guess 11 months ago when Obamacare first rolled out, that did not go well.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like, you know, as it's gone along, it has, the rollout's gotten better, the problems have eased. And that's probably in some ways taken the issue for some candidates off the table.
Right. It doesn't have, I mean, you don't have to convince everybody. As I say, I think people, if you're using it as a campaign tool, I think that they're looking at numbers, you know, and they're deciding, you know, what whether this is who it will play with and well. And, you know, I wouldn't know what those numbers are, but that's what drives the campaign is those numbers. Hmm.
Again, each day brings us a little closer to the November elections, and we're discussing the candidates on the ballot in both Ohio and Kentucky. We talked about Ohio first, a little bit of Kentucky. We'll switch back to Ohio after a short break. This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. We're discussing the candidates on the ballot for the November midterm elections in Ohio and Kentucky with Jean Beaupre, the Assistant Director of the Philosophy, Politics, and Public Honors Program at Xavier University, Cincinnati Enquirer Politics and Kentucky Government Reporter Scott Wortman, and Ohio Public Radio and Television State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kessler, who waited patiently with us while we were talking about Kentucky there. You can join our conversation. Scott waited patiently when we were talking about Ohio. You can join our conversation, 513-419-7100, or email talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter.
Karen, talk to us a little bit about this legal fight going on over early voting and where things stand right now.
Well, right now things stand that the state has appealed the vote, the rule on early voting that came down last Friday. A federal judge ruled with, sided with voting rights advocates from the NAACP and other groups that wanted to restore what's called the Golden Week, which is that week where people could register to vote and cast a ballot at the same time. And it would also move early voting. It was supposed to start on October 7th. By the federal judge's ruling, it starts on September 30th. It would restore 2 weekends of early voting, which was critical to the voting rights advocates who said that those weekend hours are really, really important to especially voters that are tied with certain urban churches and other groups that really rely on weekend times to get their voters out. And so right now the state is appealing that ruling, and they're hoping for an expedited ruling on that because we're getting really close now.
Yeah, and the Board of Election officials around the state, you know, have to know what to do.
Absolutely. And yes, the ballots have been printed and nothing's going to change on the ballot. But the question is, and we saw this in 2012, the idea of having these voting centers where people can turn out to vote, people need to know when they're open. People need to know when they can count on voting if they want to go vote in person. And of course, Republicans will say, well, that's not the only way to vote. You can vote by mail. You can drop off your absentee ballot application or your absentee ballot that you filled out. You can drop that off at a Board of Elections office. That there are a variety of ways to vote, but a lot of people do like to vote in that little booth in person, and so people need to know when that is.
Well, and you talked about the weekends and about the like in the black churches in the urban areas, you have the Souls to the Polls efforts, you know, where they just right after church they just take them all down to the Board of Elections and they cast ballots, and it's been very effective tool.
Right. And in fact, in 2012, I went out to the one here in the Columbus area, and there were a lot of people who had just come from church. And I'll tell you, the Sunday before the election in 2012 at the voting center here in Columbus was just like it was theater of the bizarre, because it was people who were protesting, people who were voting, lines, long, long lines, and people in all sorts of costumes with all sorts of signs and paraphernalia for sale. And it was like Cirque du Soleil. But in
pretty
some
much
other
same
weird,
here,
bizarro universe, you know.
So it may not be a surprise that the Republican county commissioners wanted to move the Board of Elections out to East Northwest something or other.
Out to Mount Airy.
Well, and I mean that's not accessible the way the downtown is. I mean, I would agree. I went around. I was blown away when I went down there and saw lines that were just blocks long.
Sure.
Karen, when we were talking earlier, we talked about the governor's race, state auditor, treasurer, secretary of state, and attorney general, the constitutional officers. Also, the races on the ballot, though, this fall for the House of Representatives and state Senate, both of which right now are overwhelmingly controlled by Republicans. Is there any thought that is going to change after November?
Well, there may be some thought, but it's not gonna. you've got the entire Ohio House, all 99 members who are on the ballot this time. Half of the Ohio Senate, there's 33 members. There are 60 Republicans in the 99-member House, and the Republican Senate, Republicans dominate in the Senate 2-1. So there's just no way that Democrats can retain control of either chamber, especially since the real contests in many of these districts were in the primary. That was when a lot of the candidates were running against people in their own party. The way these districts are drawn, which is the same way they're drawn at the congressional level in a sense, they're drawn to benefit one party or the other. And so the contest was in the primary.
Karen, this is not a well thought out question, but is there a role in all that for term limits? In other words, as a Democrat, does it affect one party more than the other? No.
Well, I know where you're going here, yeah. But I think because there has been some talk about term limits, that term limits, which passed in Ohio in 1992 and still are seen as, for the most part, supported by voters. There are some people that really don't think that term limits have done what they were hoping that term limits would do. I mean, term limits have created a situation where people are bopping back and forth between the chambers, which, yeah, most people don't have a big problem with. But it's also creating situations where people get here and they don't necessarily know exactly the process. They rely on lobbyists a lot. Lobbyists end up playing a big role in legislation. There's a tremendous amount of money, even at the state level now. And so there's some thought about whether term limits might come back onto the ballot as part of the constitutional modernization process. Ohio is undergoing a series of hearings with the Constitutional Modernization Commission that could result in some things that voters might decide on term limits. The thought right now is to maybe extend term limits, extend the length of a term, but not necessarily extend the number of terms that one person could hold.
Karen, refresh my memory. Are there any statewide issues on the November ballot?
There are not. No. We came close with, there was some talk about a same-sex marriage amendment that would possibly seek to overturn the one that was in the Constitution that was voted on in 2004. That didn't make it. Medical marijuana is not there. This voter bill of rights that some folks had talked about, that is not going to be there. So, yeah, there are no ballot issues, and that is considered to be potentially a concern for Democrats in terms of getting voter turnout. I think somebody mentioned it earlier, that why would Democrats turn out if they're frustrated with their candidate if there are no ballot issues? I mean, I guess school levies are an issue to a lot of people, so maybe that'll get some people to turn out.
But we saw it in 2011 with Senate Bill 5. I mean, you know, what it did to the turnout.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
If there had been something like the Voter Bill of Rights on the ballot this fall, that might have had some kind of impact.
Right, and probably more on the Democratic side than the Republican side. So,
well, and I would have expected when we were talking about this last year that maybe the people who wanted to overturn the ban on gay marriage, that they would really have been looking at this year, because that would have been something that would have driven a lot of Democratic voters out and a lot of moderate voters out. So it would have probably helped the Democratic candidates.
Yes.
But that did not happen, and there was a lot of concern within the community about whether the timing was right for an amendment that would overturn the same-sex marriage ban. And they're going to try that eventually, but this is not going to be the year.
Scott, let's switch to Kentucky. We hear Karen say that Republicans control the House and Senate, and that's likely not to change. In Kentucky, Democrats control the House, Senate, Republicans control the
Correct.
Senate.
Yes.
Republicans would really like to gain control of the House, which would be the first time in, what, more than a century that it hasn't been controlled by
Democrats. Yeah, I think
Democrats.
The 20s, or if I remember correctly, around somewhere around there, yeah.
But realistically, what's the chances of Republicans taking the Kentucky House?
I'd say maybe 37%, let's say. It's possible,
yeah.
but not possible, but I would say not likely this year. They might pick up maybe 2 or 3 seats. They need 5 to do it. It's kind of an uphill battle because there's also Democrats that are challenging some Republicans as well that also might pick up some seats. So
now in Ohio, we were talking about the top of the ticket, what it means for Democrats on down the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Does that in any way in Kentucky, with people coming out to vote for McConnell, help in any way with a Republican takeover of the House?
Both parties think that their candidate, Grimes or McConnell, will do just that. And I think you'll see a higher turnout than normal for senatorial race.
I'm sorry to be ignorant about this. Are there term limits on the legislature in Kentucky?
No.
So they could be there forever. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. In Kentucky, too, as you look ahead to next year, we're starting to see some more activity about candidates announced in the governor's race. I mean,
yeah.
I think James Comer announced at Fancy Farm, but then this week named his running mate?
Yeah, which is a Northern Kentucky Senator, Chris McDaniel, which is pretty big for Northern Kentucky. And I actually heard some Democrats, most who don't actually want to be named, who are pretty excited to see a local man on the top of the ticket next year. So it's it hasn't happened much. People often reference the last successful gubernatorial candidate from Northern Kentucky got shot 4 days after taking office. That was in 1900. So.
Yeah. Is that when they changed the thing that you can't fight a duel with deadly weapons?
I think that was on before that, but it's good advice either way.
Has there been any more? And I think we talked, and there likely hasn't been, but if Rand Paul wants to run for, Kentucky Senator Rand Paul wants to run for president in 2016, that's also when his term is up for
Correct.
Kentucky Senate. There was some thought that some Republicans in the Senate, I think, wanted to allow him to run for both.
Yeah.
But that's probably going to be shot pretty much dead if Democrats retain control of the Kentucky House.
It was about a four-sentence-long bill, and Democratic Speaker of the House Greg Stumbo said he hasn't had a chance to read it. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, there is, if they retain control, I mean, there is absolutely no way that's going to happen.
Yeah, no. Still trying to read it.
Bill, this we'll switch back to Ohio. Bill asked on Facebook, if there has to be someone from Ohio running for president, it should be Rob Portman, not John Kasich. Thoughts on that?
Well,
I've actually talked to Rob Portman about that, and he's been really cagey. It's interesting to watch
him
now because
he's
really out there in front on a lot of different things now, as you could almost try to see him putting together the beginnings of a campaign. But he says when you confront him and ask him directly, he pulls back and hedges a little bit and says he wants to see the other candidates that are out there, and if indeed he feels that nobody is the person he would want to support, then maybe he would. So he's kind of vague about it.
Yes, I've had that discussion with him too, and then it quickly turns to I'm focused like a laser on the 2014 Senate elections, and I'm trying to get a Republican majority in the United States Senate. And after November election, well, maybe then I'll start thinking about the bigger picture. Now, but if he did decide to set up an exploratory committee, I don't think there's any question that Rob Portman has access to a whole lot of money. And if somebody like Jeb Bush does not get into the race, and there's no indication that he is at this point, I think a lot of that establishment Republican money could flow towards a Rob Portman.
So it's critical he does have a window when he can make that decision, because those people will start putting their money someplace else. And that's a question, really. And then the second thing is, that is a shift, though. The position he's taking now is a shift from the absolutely no position that he had before, right?
Yeah.
Well,
some time ago, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah, and now it's, well, maybe I'll take a look at it. But, as Karen says, it's a matter of who else gets into the race.
Yeah.
And the Republican establishment money is going to be looking for somebody like Rob Portman, mm-hmm. who is, you know, considered a mainstream Republican, not
yep.
too far to the right.
Yep.
You know,
he's got a good resume
has a very good resume. That's right.
And I think he's been kind of one that's been talked about for years. He was always supposedly on the short list for vice president. And so I think while he's enjoyed that attention, maybe he'd like to see a little bit more attention on him at the top of the ticket, maybe. And so I think he's
Karen,
thinking about it.
He could be, you know, even if he doesn't run for president, he could be on that short list again.
Oh, absolutely. And I think there are people who are talking about John Kasich being on that short list.
Right.
So,
exactly.
Yeah.
He's very practiced at being the opponent in the presidential debate,
yeah,
so
he'd
have a leg up there, wouldn't he?
And there's a chance that maybe at the top of the ticket or probably the second spot on the ticket, when that convention is held in Cleveland in 2016, wow. An Ohioan could be on it.
Sure.
Yeah.
For the first time since 1944, by the way.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, Howard knows his history. Scott, before we wrap up here, we talked a lot in Kentucky about the state, the U.S. Senate race, the House race, state Senate races. Are there a couple of key races, particularly in northern Kentucky, that folks are going to be watching this November?
There are a few judge executive races. I'm not sure how close they are. Like in Campbell County, former County Commissioner Ken Recton is challenging longtime judge executive Steve Pendry, who's a Republican. Ken Recton's a Democrat. There are two state house races, both also in Campbell County, the biggest being the state Senate race. The Senate President Pro Tem, Katie Stein, is resigning, and so that's an open seat between a Republican and a Democrat.
And probably the judge executive race that got most of the attention was in Kenton County in
yes.
the primary in May, and that's already pretty much been decided, correct?
Yes.
There's no Democrat in that race.
I believe so. I'm not as knowledgeable on the local races, but yes.
We've been talking about the candidates on the ballot in Ohio and Kentucky for the November midterm elections. Our guests were Gene Beaupre, the Assistant Director of the Philosophy, Politics, and Public Honors Program at Xavier University, Cincinnati Enquirer Politics and Kentucky Government Reporter Scott Wortman, and Ohio Public Radio and Television's State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler. We thank you all for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Thanks.
And thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our technical director was Bruce Ellis. Here and Now is coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. With Howard Wilkinson, I'm Jay Hanselman.